Welcome back to the latest episode of the EIQ Cast. My name is Ross Levanto, and I'm your host today. And we're joined, as always, it seems, by EIQ product evangelist, John Linkus. John, welcome back yet again.
Thanks, Ross. Thanks for joining, everybody.
And, well, we have a name, John, to put on a board, tack on the board, and talk about today. And that name is Albert Gonzalez, who was indicted yesterday.
We do indeed.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. He was indicted yesterday in a series of allegations related to the theft of credit card information. And it's kind of interesting, John, that it seems as though there were several specific cases where electronic information, credit card information, has been stolen over the past several years. We talked earlier this year about Heartland Payment Systems. There was Hannaford Brothers, the situation, the regional supermarket chain, where there was a data theft incident. And it seems as though we can now say that the circle of characters responsible for those data thefts, allegedly anyway, appears to be similar. Is that kind of what we're seeing this morning?
Absolutely. You know, it's pretty fascinating, the three data breaches that you just referred to, TJX several years ago, for which Mr. Gonzalez was already under indictment, plus Hannaford, plus Heartland Payment Systems. You know, those are sort of the triumvirate, if you will, of the biggest recognized data breaches out there. Those are the ones that the media always goes to. And you know, what's interesting is we learned two interesting things, something technical and something non-technical. The technical thing that we learned is that SQL injection attacks appeared to be the basis for which these data breaches occurred. So
pretty,
you know,
and that's common. That's a common situation.
Tremendously common.
Yes.
That's why organizations buy, you know, intrusion detection and prevention software to detect when that kind of stuff happens. That's why companies buy database access monitoring products to look for those unusual patterns of data egressing out of their environment, or at least that's why they should have them. So that's pretty fascinating. So we kind of learned that the attack profile was pretty similar in all three cases. The other thing that we learned that was very interesting is that there were two unnamed indicted persons, and they are Russians, kind of points us in the direction that, as we talked about a number of months ago, you know, these probably aren't script kiddies out there. These are, you know, people who in all likelihood have ties to organized crime, not simply the fact that they're Russian, but the fact that it was such an organized type of an attack, and the fact that it crossed international borders from the United States into Russia.
And it does seem as though there was some coordination on the part of both Mr. Gonzalez and, as you mentioned, those two unnamed co-conspirators, in that according to the New York Times this morning, I read a story that said basically what they did was they took out a list of Fortune 500 retailers, visited those retailers to kind of investigate what systems they were using for payment processing. So they had some intelligence kind of to drive their efforts, which in and of itself is kind of interesting.
Absolutely. And, you know, and I would really consider that, to be social engineering. You know, they're getting information that's publicly available from a public source, as thousands or millions of other people are. So there's really no way to filter out the noise, if you will, at that level. They went to the retail locations of these companies to see what type of POS systems were used and to gauge, what kind of technology, they used. Probably, we don't know this for a fact, but they probably did some physical surveillance to check for cameras and other recording devices that might be in the retail locations, and then they were able to look at the applications on the POSs and other displays and exploit those based on what they saw. So, you know, that's a key initial part of the attack vector, and once they had that publicly available information, they were then able to exploit it using known vulnerabilities and technologies.
So just to put some perspective on this, I'm a credit card holder, obviously myself. There are millions of credit card holders across the country, across the world. I read the paper today. I see that this gentleman was able to use, while clever, a fairly simple social engineering tactic to do some research. He used what is a fairly common exploit on websites that exist across the web to, you know, start his attack, start this theft of credit card information. Should consumers just start ripping up their credit cards? I mean, what is the response here? What's the caution? What's the response that we should see from consumers everywhere that have credit cards?
Yeah, I would say that probably ripping them up is probably closer to a last resort type of thing. But I, you know, it's a valid point. I think what it really comes down to is a couple of things. First and foremost, organizations that have any responsibility in the chain of credit card processing need to be cognizant of all of the threats to their customer and cardholder data. And that includes everything from physical security and surveillance through, you know, ensuring that the payment applications, the software, particularly the online software that can accept credit card data, is really secure and is not susceptible to those types of SQL injection attacks that are such a common attack vector. And, you know, continuing on the chain, ensuring that they've got appropriate encryption and authentication in place from a technology perspective. But, you know, again, as I'm fond of saying, and as you know, Ross, it's a lot more than just the pure technology. There has to be a conscientious effort to ensure that these organizations are doing everything that they reasonably can to ensure the confidentiality and the integrity of cardholder data.
And recognizing, of course, that you never can do too much to protect credit card information, and also recognizing the fact, as we've talked in the past on previous episodes of EIQcast, that in some cases these particular retailers were told by the credit card companies that their data had been compromised, so they didn't even know themselves in some cases initially. What are some things that, you know, retailers can do? I mean, what should they be told? What's the lesson learned here to try to prevent these types of things from happening in the future?
Well, I think, you know, one of the lessons is that good security begins with good security policies, which is really involves understanding what your assets are, what the threats are to your assets, you know, having good risk management, and then implementing appropriate controls and doing that consistently. One of the things, for example, if you look at PCI DSS, and, you know, which we've talked about many times in the past, you know, PCI DSS is there for organizations to use as a blueprint and starting point for securing their cardholder data. And so if you look at some of the things that PCI mandates, one of the key things is certainly monitoring, right? And that's something, of course, that we harp on at EIQ Networks because we know how critical it is. Simply having a technology like software that, you know, identity or intrusion detection and prevention software, for example, data loss prevention software, or DAM software, having these technologies is good, but they're useless unless you're monitoring and correlating that data across the field so that you know when, perhaps someone's coming to your corporate website or a payment card website and putting in a credit card number, that customer is trusting the organization. And so the organization needs to know when somebody might fat finger a credit card number versus when there's an actual attack in place. And the only way they can do that is by correlating across a lot of different types of data. And frankly, not just the technology data, doing things like regularly looking at recordings of physical access to their site, even by the general public in a retail location, to try and pick up on the tags of people who might be trying to, for example, figure out what particular version of software is being used in a POS in order to exploit it at a later date.
Right. And if I'm a consumer, are there any tips or things that I should, lessons learned as a consumer and a credit card user that I should take away from this?
Sure. You know, one of the things, Ross, that I've always found interesting is that if you look at, and again, we'll take PCI DSS because it's a good starting point for cardholder data security. One of the parties involved in the process of data security, of cardholder data security, that is not included in PCI DSS is the consumer. PCI DSS is focused on, you know, it's focused on the retailers, the payment processors, the financial institutions. It doesn't really address, okay, you know, you as a consumer have some responsibilities as well. And the reality is that we do, you know, and some of those responsibilities include things like not only the things you would think of first, like physical security of your credit card and making sure that, you know, you're not giving out credit card information to someone, unless you know exactly who they are and you trust them. But also things like when you do go online and you're purchasing something online, go to vendors that you know and that you trust. If you're just going out to Google and browsing, buy technology or buy computers, and you happen to come to a website of a company that, you know, maybe the website looks a little weird, there's some spelling errors, it looks a little dubious, I wouldn't put my credit card number on that site. And I think most consumers should understand that can point to potential risk. So I think just like the retailers, the credit card processors, and the financial institutions, consumers have to be very cognizant of where their data is going at all times as well. If they're not giving it out, in all likelihood, the chances of that data being breached are very low.
And I think certainly we should warn those listening that not to build a false sense of security, that this was just a small group of individuals that inflicted a lot of damage, because certainly what they did could be repeated, right? So, I mean, I think there's some – seeing a trend line this morning, well, this is just a small group of people and, could be considered, quote-unquote, an isolated type of situation, but certainly the threat is real. Isn't that the case?
Absolutely, and that's a great point, Ross. You know, this is one, cell, if you will, of malicious hackers who are going after well-known established targets. But the reality is, for example, if you go online to, say, the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse database online, which is one of these repositories that keeps track of data breach incidents, you'll see that that these are just a small number of the overall number of data breaches that occur, and they occur everywhere. These happen to be large retail establishments, which is probably why this particular group of attackers targeted them once they were able to replicate it at TJX. They then went on to do the same thing at Hannaford and Heartland. But the reality is that, data is being breached every day across every type of organization, from hospitals to educational institutions to, commercial enterprises, and the attacker profiles vary as well. Yes, certainly there are organized attackers, and, these guys that were caught or indicted at least represent only a small portion. But the reality is there are a lot of other, groups or cells of people trying to do the same thing, just as there are groups of script kiddies that will reach for the low-hanging fruit, just as there are groups of people who are trying to conduct insider fraud within organizations, or people that are trying to, do corporate espionage from the outside. There are many, many different types of attackers. Organizations need to be very cognizant of what those attack profiles are and do what they can to prevent them.
Well, prosecutors are calling it the largest case of computer crime and identity theft ever prosecuted. So certainly, you have something this significant, there are lessons to be learned. And John, thank you for spending some time this morning to chat with us about them. We appreciate you coming back on the show with us.
Absolutely, Ross. Thanks.
And for all of us, those listening out there, this has been the EIQ Cast.
This podcast was produced by EIQ Networks, a provider of enterprise security and compliance management solutions. For more information, visit EIQ Networks on the web at www.eiqnetworks.com. EIQ Networks, security and compliance management, redefined.